Good morning. Let's get straight to markets.
Take a look at the impact for the indices.
Factual. Succinct. All you need to know before your trading day starts. Subscribe to our newsletter, CNBC's Daily Open.
Beyond the Valley.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Valley, the podcast that explores the world of tech. I'm Tom Chitty and with me is CNBC's senior tech correspondent Arjun Karpal. We're back with the words of Alibaba's co-founder Joe Tsai last week. In an interview with CNBC, the Taiwanese-Canadian businessman said that the Chinese e-commerce giant had put its recent troubles behind it.
And now with the restructuring, with a new management team in place, we feel a lot more confident in placing one of the top e-commerce players in China, where we didn't feel as confident before. We felt the competitive pressure, but now we're back.
Internal reshuffles, cancelled IPOs, and increasing competition from new e-commerce players has threatened its dominance. But confidence is growing that AI could turbocharge its e-commerce business.
Beyond the Valley.
Hello, Arjun. Nice to see you again.
Good to be back again, Tom. As you know, I spent the last sort of week or so on the road. I was in Barcelona and Munich. I can't reveal right now to our listeners why I was in Munich, because you know, that's going to be something we... Yeah, I know. So stay tuned in, you know, maybe, what, 3 weeks or so, we might have something to say more on that.
Really teasing the content there.
Absolutely, yeah. It was good fun, though. It was good fun. So, you know, stay tuned, everybody.
Nice. And you're off from tomorrow. Can you reveal to the listeners where you're heading, what you're doing?
It's another thing I can't reveal.
Another international man of mystery.
Yeah. You know, you've got to have a bit of intrigue to sort of leave there. You know, you've got to have a little bit of mystery.
I imagine there'll be no postings.
Do you know what else they could do, Tom? Email us.
Oh, they could. Which, absolutely. Yeah. Why don't implore the listener to email us?
You should definitely email us if you want to find out what Munich was about, where we're going on vacation, and also just, you know, everything about tech as well at beyondthevalley@cnbc.com.
Well done, Arjun. That's brilliant. Before we move on to our main story, Arjun, we've got to do Stat of the Week, which is...
75%.
75%. Okay. I've got a good idea what this might be. I'm feeling confident for the first time in several weeks.
Wow.
Here we go.
You could break the losing streak here, Tom.
It's been quite long, let's be honest. Later in the episode, we'll also be discussing Bitcoin, which is on track to reach its lifetime peak, and India, which has approved 3 microchip plants as it pursues ambitions to become a major chip hub. But back to our main story, Alibaba. Arjun, you lived in China for a few years. Alibaba has been a huge success story for China, but is it still seen as the leading e-commerce platform?
Its reputation definitely has taken some damage over the last sort of 3 years or so. It's really hard, I think, if you've not experienced sort of living in China, to sort of fully get across how all-encompassing Alibaba is as a company. Yes, it's got various e-commerce platforms, but also its payments, its food delivery services, its cloud computing. It's huge. And so it touches many parts of, you know, the world of tech, basically. And importantly, in China, the world of the consumer. You know, I would, you know, hazard guess that perhaps, you know, consumers at least interact with an Alibaba at least, you know, once a day. Almost, it's pretty all encompassing, and so this is a company that was, as you mentioned, sort of the shining star of China and its e-commerce ambitions, but also its broader technology ambitions. But its reputation has been tarnished, I think, over the last 3 years now, and that's on the back of a few things. And I think it all began at the back end of 2020. The the company's affiliate, Ant Group, was gearing up for a blockbuster IPO. Would have been the biggest IPO in history, $34.5 billion, a dual listing in both Shanghai and Hong Kong. Now, Ant Group is the affiliate or the company behind Alipay, the mobile payments platform, one of the biggest in China alongside WeChat Pay. And the listing was abruptly scrapped, I think a day before it was scheduled to happen. Now, quick story from this. I'd flown to Shanghai a couple of days before the listing. We were going to cover it from there. We had sort of a 5-10 minute interview with the CEO lined up. Got off a plane from Guangzhou, where I was living, landed in Shanghai, got to the hotel, dropped the bags down, and my phone just started exploding. Colleagues from the US.
Not literally.
No. Just messages pinging everywhere.
Yeah.
Colleagues from the US saying, what's happened? We've just seen a flash come across the wires that the Ant Group listing has been scrapped. And I was like, oh, what's going on? So I'm obviously, pick up a call, find out what was going on. And, that changed the entire, going from looking for an interview. Shortly we were on the streets of Shanghai the next morning broadcasting live about the scrapped IPO. But that for many was seen as the pivotal moment which began what was one, the tightening of the tech landscape in China. Lots of regulation came in. The power of a lot of these tech giants was clipped and kept under check. But it also was seen very much as a tightening on the personal empire of Jack Ma, who is one of the founders of Alibaba and who led the company for a long time. So that was what happened, and that's what felt like it sparked a big change. And Alibaba's value since November 2020 has plummeted as well. Now, there's value of the company on the one hand, and whether it still is a leader in e-commerce, it still very much is a leader in e-commerce, I think, in China. But it's got, at the moment, particularly amongst investors, certainly a damaged reputation.
The regulation is obviously a key point in the story of Alibaba, particularly with Jack Ma, as you mentioned. But also we should sort of reference the fact that off the back of the COVID-19 pandemic, lockdowns, a slowing Chinese economy, all of these things have sort of affected Alibaba's business quite significantly. Where could you attribute the key reason for maybe Alibaba's decline?
Yeah, so I think it was certainly that regulatory tightening and the slowdown Alibaba saw as a result of that. But that the sort of difficult Chinese economy we've seen over the past couple of years also has been a major factor. Consumers' spending has been very cautious. Companies maybe haven't been spending as much on technology, i.e. cloud. So there's loads and loads of different reasons and ways the Chinese economy has impacted Alibaba. But I think there's two other big factors here. One is competition. Alibaba, whilst it's still a leader in e-commerce, has faced stiffer competition from the likes of PDD, which is another player, JD.com, which are the traditional e-commerce players, but also from companies like Douyin, which is run by ByteDance, the company that runs TikTok, is effectively the sister app of TikTok in China, and they're pushing into the e-commerce sphere as well. Now, I know a lot of people have been talking a lot about the competition to Alibaba. Yes, it's facing competition, but I don't think that it's... I think sometimes those conversations have become a bit overblown. Where companies like PDD and Douyin play are heavily discounted goods, which are sort of bought in lower tier cities or smaller cities, less wealthy cities. Alibaba and JD in particular, they both still have a very strong hold on some of the larger, wealthier cities as well. But there is no doubt that has had an effect. But also, I think Alibaba's got to a stage where it's just too big and bureaucratic. And my colleague and I, Evelyn and I, both of us reported a story earlier this year which published in January. And, you know, we discussed with some of our sources what was going on. And that was one of the key themes, that it's just got too big, that perhaps there's conflicting ideas with management. It's too slow to get things done. And so one of the things you have seen from Alibaba over the past sort of few months is they reshuffled the entire company to break it down into six distinct units. So, for example, cloud, the Chinese commerce business, its logistics business, it, as a way to kind of give these units autonomy to make decisions faster. And so there's this big focus right now from management on trying to be more nimble and getting these individual businesses to move faster. But that's a process that takes time. You've seen numerous management reshuffles. The CEO, Daniel Zhang, stepped down. Surprisingly, last year it was a big shock move. A veteran and a co-founder called Eddie Wu took over that role. Joe Tsai, who you mentioned earlier, Tom, he is now the chairman. So there's been all these reshuffles. There's been all this restructuring going on in a bid to kind of unlock growth again for Alibaba. Now, look, these processes take time. It's only been a few months. And I think this year is going to be pivotal as to whether Alibaba can reignite that spark, that growth, that leadership that so many people know it to have had in the past.
Subscribe to the Squawkbox Europe Express podcast. Join Steve, Karen, and myself, Arabile, in unscripted and dynamic debate around the day's top stories with first and exclusive interviews of the best in business and global newsmakers, original points of view and instant analysis of the latest business news and key market themes. Get set for the day ahead. Squawkbox Europe Express podcast, now available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts.
Before we discuss what Alibaba are going to do to try to sort of combat the challenges they've faced and grow again, our listeners have probably heard of Jack Ma. They may not have heard of some of the other characters in this story. But when it comes to Jack Ma, which he seemed like, you know, one of the biggest Chinese celebrities, let alone one of the biggest sort of tech titans in China. What's happened to Jack Ma? Just to give us a little sort of side story to him.
Well, Jack Ma, sort of after the IPO of Ant Group was scrapped, Jack Ma took a bit of a backseat, shall we say. He wasn't seen much in public. He was laying low for a while. And so, you know, he was... Prior to the scrapping of the IPO, he was extremely vocal. You'd see him at a lot of events speaking internationally. He was one of the sort of few Chinese tech execs, I'd say, who were known on the global stage as well. And so, you know, he's kind of gone in the back as well. I believe he still advises the company a lot. He may not be as hands-on with it, but he certainly called in recent months for the company to refine that growth as well. Him and Joe Tsai both recently bought shares in Alibaba again, which was, I think, a very important statement from those two, who are highly respected within the company and the industry, of course, that they still believe in the future of this company. It was a show of confidence, I suspect. And so that's what's happening at the moment. I believe that, you know, Jack Ma is devoting a lot of his time, I've seen, to sort of education and various other areas like that. So he's definitely less hands-on with the Alibaba business, but no doubt, you know, someone of his standing is involved in many ways.
The fact that Joe Tsai and Jack Ma did do the share buyback, I think it was $200 million worth of shares, which was a huge sign of confidence, as you've mentioned. Off the back of that, they must have plans, and Joe Tsai said in that interview, trying to get AI to work with e-commerce, and that those two could really marry up and really benefit from each other. What else are they aiming to do, or is it AI which is the sort of key focus?
AI is definitely the key focus for this company, and one of the things we haven't touched upon is a cloud business. Now, this is interesting. I interviewed the former CEO Daniel Zhang in 2018, and one of the lines that came out of that interview is he said, "We think cloud is going to be our main business in the future." Now, I think cloud still accounts for just, you know, under 10% of the company's revenues. It certainly, I think, hasn't evolved in the way that he had thought at the time. That's a place that has had a lot of competition. Government agencies prefer using other cloud vendors like Huawei, for example. And the company was planning an IPO of the cloud of business, obviously. Then they scrapped it, citing issues with US chip export restrictions. We know market conditions haven't been great for tech companies in China. And this was supposed to be the future, but, you know, it hasn't quite played out like that. So with the AI picture, this is key. And I think it's key in the cloud computing unit. We've seen companies like Microsoft take advantage of their AI products by selling them through the cloud unit. And I suspect Alibaba, with a lot of its, you know, it's got its own large language model. It's investing heavily. You'll see them do a similar thing. But it's not only that. AI could be used across the company's business, right? When you think about e-commerce, AI could be used quite heavily for recommendations, for customer service, these chatbots, for example. All of these things could be used in those areas. Logistics, another area, you could use AI for planning of the logistics. So, you know, this is a company, I think, like many tech businesses around the world, that is going to look quite heavily to this merging and fast-growing technology to really revamp its business. I think fundamentally, though, Alibaba will need to deal with some of those structural issues that it has, the nimbleness that it appears to have lost, the bureaucracy of the organization, the ability to move fast. Is the restructuring going to work? Because it's all well and good having all that technology, but I think transforming the business now will require a lot on the restructure front, and that to kind of pan out in a good way. If the structure is right, then they can certainly lean into all of these technologies and take advantage of it.
Josiah mentioned that, you know, cloud computing was a key area for growth for the company, but the cloud computing IPO was scrapped. I mean, we've mentioned that. Why did that happen? Do we know the reasons behind that, and why is it then still seen as an area of growth? What was the decision? What was the reason for that decision?
Yeah, so we've been talking about in previous episodes how the US has put in restrictions on exporting NVIDIA chips to China. Now, companies like Alibaba, Baidu, others who have these cloud units, they rely on these chips for the training of their AI models in the data center. And so, you know, they said, they cited these chip restrictions as a reason for scrapping the IPO. But, you know, if you look at what was happening in the markets at the time they scrapped this last year, Chinese tech is still under pressure. Investors who were burned by the way the Chinese government enacted all these big regulations, plunging, you know, billions of dollars of the share price of tech companies and hurting investors a lot, I think have been very cautious about stepping back in to Chinese tech. And so when you look at all of that, when you look at the economy still under pressure, the cloud business not really growing that much, all of those factors together no doubt came into the decision to scrap the IPO at this moment. I think what you'll see now is a big, and you know, the company has spoken about this last year. They revamped the cloud division, again, trying to focus on certain areas where they feel like they had a strength. And they're going to see if that makes a difference to growth at this point. But I think that's going to be key. Can they get this cloud business growing again? Once it grows again, I have no doubt they'll think about ways to bring this business to the market, because it is an area they still feel very strongly about, where they've got a big role to play.
Finally, I just want to bring it back to kind of what we said was the key focus for Alibaba was AI. And the ability for the company to quickly create product catalogs for consumers, as well as virtual dressing rooms for clothes. Is that where you see kind of Alibaba really lead in that area? Well, at least in China.
I think with AI, all of China's tech companies, Alibaba, Baidu, Tencent, they're all investing in their own large language models. They kind of have to. And you see that similarly in the US, right? Microsoft, Amazon, Google, and others. So that investment's going to continue. For Alibaba, I think, to be successful in AI, it's got to it's got to come up with the products, I think, that it can sell with its cloud business. That's what I think on one side. But I think, like you were saying, things like product recommendations or catalogs and virtual dressing rooms, all of this could really enhance the e-commerce business and help it to stand out from the competition. But also, you know, a lot of companies, I know that this is more of the boring side of AI, I guess, but many companies are talking about AI to just improve efficiencies. If you can get processes done by, you know, chatbots, et cetera, where they previously would have been human, that's a cost saving. People are using it. If you can get more done to improve productivity, there's all these underlying things that could certainly help the business more broadly. And I think for Alibaba, one of the things that's going to have to happen, as I said, the restructuring needs to take hold, but there needs to be an upshot too on the Chinese economy. The Chinese economy needs to improve. And the government, you see, has sort of started to talk about stimulus to the economy. And, you know, if we see an improvement in the Chinese economy this year, then that usually translates through to better performance from Alibaba. And so I think that's one of the things that people are going to be watching and waiting for is Chinese economy improvement, Alibaba's restructuring, the infusion of AI into the business, a consumer getting stronger, and, you know, clearly management issues of the past gone away. Those, I think, you know, it's not a sort of silver bullet solution in many senses. It's all of these factors combined will, I believe, bring this company back to growth.
Okay, brilliant. Let's leave that story there for now, but let's find out what else is happening in the world of tech. Bitcoin, at the time of recording, the prices, what, Arjun?
Around $65,000.
And the lifetime peak was $69,000, is that right?
Just under. Like a smidgen under.
Okay. So Arjun, as big US banks pour money into the digital currency, has its edgy reputation changed forever, do you think?
In what sense?
That it was deemed something that was for the outsiders of institutional finance, of the sort of mainstream banks, that it was for people that were living on the edges, cutting edge tech and the edges of society, shall we say?
Yes, I don't know is the answer, because the problem is we've seen this in cycles, right? Bitcoin works in cycles. And every time we get near to these all-time highs, you know, we have this conversation, is it hitting the mainstream? Is it becoming more acceptable? One of the things I would say this time around, the cycle, and we've spoken about it, we've done the episodes about it, the Bitcoin ETF, which we've spoken about a lot in the US, or the multiple Bitcoin ETFs, what that has done is certainly bought a veneer of legitimacy to this market. And if you are an investor who now wants to play in this market, you don't need to go onto exchanges and download apps and have accounts and store your Bitcoin. You could just buy an ETF. And that's a huge game changer in being able to have access to this market. And so, yes, I do think the reputation has changed somewhat. I think there are still those who will say this is dirty money. It's only used for buying illicit goods online, etc. And it's not real. It's not a currency. And those debates will continue, whether this is a genuine currency or not. We've had that debate. This is not the time for it. But these are the things that will continue. But certainly the reputation has changed. And one of the things we see with Bitcoin is FOMO, the fear of missing out, right?
Mm.
That's what happens. That's what happens in these cycles. You know, the frenzy returns. We're at near peaks. We're so close to the all-time high. I bet you, you know, there's so many people who have just about broken even in the past week after buying this back in, you know, the previous high. And those people are probably very excited right now. It's great. And it'll be interesting to see how much more they want to dip their toe into this market. Will they be buying more? I don't know. But certainly in terms of legitimacy, Bitcoin is gaining that to some extent. But I think those sort of the view on it will still be very divisive. It's one of the most divisive sort of pieces of tech these days that I've come across.
I was interested in reading about Coinbase collapsing off the back of the such high demand for Bitcoin last week, and that some of the people's wallets for Bitcoin said it was $0, or at least that was what it was showing, which, you know, is a glitch, and you know, I'm sure they sorted it out quite quickly. But again, it's that I mean, the fear that I would have had if I was in their place, for a lot of people, it's that thrill of the unknown, of where this could go, and obviously making lots of money. But also there's this like kind of who's running this, really. I think people get caught up in that, and you know, that's quite enticing in a way.
Yeah, I think so. I think people like the excitement of it all, the thrill of it all.
Yeah. All right, we'll leave crypto and Bitcoin there. Our next story is about India, which has been courting foreign chip firms to set up operations in the country as it invests billions of dollars to realize its semiconductor ambitions. Are India, Arjun, a little bit behind the curve on this, or are they just arriving at the right time?
I think they are arriving at the right time. I think one of the big shifts that's happened in India's, let's shall we say, sort of technology development more recently is that they have really been focusing on moving up the value chain in technology, shall we say. And what that looks like to India is investing in high-tech manufacturing. And you've seen them, for example, pull Apple into the country to manufacture some of their latest iPhones there. And now this is moving into semiconductors. And we've spoken so many times about the way that semiconductors are of strategic importance to so many countries. And India, equally so, has seen an opportunity here. It's trying to be supportive of the tech companies. It's trying to bring them in to sort of do all of this high-tech manufacturing and in these high-tech industries. And so this investment goes some way to do that. I think India has some strength in certain areas of the supply chain. We spoke before about the way the supply chain is structured in and how it's so global and fragmented. India has some role to play there, but I think what they're trying to do now is bringing more parts, manufacturing of those semiconductors, which typically hasn't really had much strength in. And so that's I think where it's going right now and why you're seeing them sort of move to make these investments.
We'll leave that there. But before we finish, stat of the week, which was, remind our listeners,
75%, Tom.
I believe that it is the percentage, the value that Alibaba lost in the last 12 months.
Oh, you were so close. You're right in it's the value that Alibaba has lost, but not in the last 12 months. It is from its sort of roughly how much it's lost from its peak
in
2020.
Anyway,
I was so hopeful.
I know. I should have really got that. We were talking about 2020, and I don't know what I was thinking.
There's always next time, as they say.
There's always next time. Thank you. Yeah, I will. I'll, you know, persevere once more, and I'll do better next time. Don't feel sorry for me, listeners. If you do want to tell me how bad I am at Stat of the Week, then you can by emailing beyondthevalley@cnbc.com. Please follow and subscribe to the show, and you can rate us. We would really appreciate that. But that's it for today's episode. So thank you, Arjun.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll be back for another episode of Beyond the Valley. Goodbye.
Beyond the Valley.